I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Boston. 40 years ago next Monday, America heaved a big sigh of relief. The five-month-long Arab oil embargo was finally over. The previous fall, Arab oil countries had suddenly jacked up prices and cut supplies to the U.S. and other Western countries. It was in retaliation for their support for Israel during a 1973 war. The embargo ended on March 17, 1974, when the U.S. agreed to negotiate with Syria and Israel. But the crisis rocked the U.S. economy, which had been heavily dependent on oil, and it brought promises of big changes in U.S. energy use. We asked producer John Miller to take a look at what became of those changes. Here's the first of his first two reports.
If you folks in the Middle East are listening to me, you better listen to what I'm saying and tell a friend. Because we'll take it for a while, but once you get us riled, you're going to think you got a tiger by the tail.
For those of us who lived through it, the Arab oil embargo wasn't just an inconvenience, it was an outrage. Cheap oil was an American birthright, never mind that we imported more than a third of it.
So if you don't lower the gas, we're gonna lower the boom.
Good evening.
President Richard Nixon went on TV and told us America would not stand idly by and let other countries determine our destiny.
3 weeks ago, I spoke to you about the national energy crisis and our policy for meeting it.
From now on, he said, American energy policy would be based on a truly American principle.
It can be summed up in one word that best characterizes this nation and its essential nature. That word is independence.
For Nixon, the road to energy independence had four lanes. First, conserve. Turn down our thermostats. Build more efficient cars. Second, create a strategic oil reserve to guard against future shocks. Third, ramp up domestic production by drilling in places like Alaska and the Gulf of Mexico. And fourth, develop alternatives to fossil fuels. This last one struck a chord with a young engineer named Jefferson Tester.
I wanted to work on important problems.
Tester had just got his doctorate from MIT when the embargo hit.
I think many of us felt that was a career-changing event, that it really put us on a very different path with respect to how we viewed our future as engineers and scientists.
Tester decided to work on geothermal energy. It was challenging, it was socially useful, and there was funding. Yeah, at least for a while.
In the early period, it was sustained. There was quite a bit of activity in almost every aspect of renewable energy development, but there wasn't the political will to take a long-term view on this.
When the price for oil collapses in the mid-1980s, all of that alternative energy research stops.
Meg Jacobs is an energy historian at MIT.
So everyone who had been working on solar or wind power, they just put all of their plans in the drawer.
Where they pretty much stayed for almost 20 years, which was a problem since new sources of energy typically take decades to develop.
You know something? We really love our new Ford Explorer. I love it for shopping.
But who needed them when oil was so cheap?
It's got the convenience of push-button four-wheel drive.
It was the energy version of a drinking binge. We bought millions of gas-guzzling SUVs. We doubled our oil imports, and we fought two wars in oil-producing states in the Middle East. But then, in the early 2000s, oil prices spiked again, driven at least in part by fears that the world was running out, and suddenly energy independence was back on the agenda.
Hello, Oklahoma!
Here's President Obama in 2012.
Over the last 3 years, I've directed my administration to open up millions of acres for gas and oil exploration across 23 different states.
And that was paying off, he said, with a boom in domestic production.
So we are drilling all over the place.
He went on to say drilling isn't enough. We also need to keep improving efficiency and developing renewables, what he calls his all-of-the-above energy strategy. 40 years after the Arab oil embargo, the American energy picture is different, but not much. We get about 50% more of our energy from renewable sources, but it's still less than 10% of the total. And we use about 15% less oil per person, but we still use five times the global average. And despite the current boom, we import an even higher percentage than we did in 1974. For Jefferson Tester, the geothermal engineer, that hardly sounds like progress.
I guess I become a little bit impatient with a lack of a true sense of urgency among the public right now with all of the signs out there, climate change issues, sustainability issues in general.
Of course, climate change and sustainability were not what motivated Richard Nixon to set out on the road to energy independence.
We're ready to move on to the technical side of this.
But they're very much on the minds of today's young scientists and engineers.
Take it away, Mitch.
Great. So thanks, everyone. Hi, I'm Mitchell Ishmael. I'm going to talk about tunable heat capacity within the critical region for simple fluid mixtures.
Tester now teaches renewable energy at Cornell, and he says his students are feeling the same excitement he felt back in the 1970s.
So if there was ever a good time for this country and other developed countries to reinvest in the future, now would be it, because they have a younger generation who wants to work on this, and there's plenty of need.
40 years ago, our national challenge was how to reduce our reliance on unfriendly governments for our desperately needed oil. Now it's how to wean ourselves from fossil fuels altogether. Tester says that will take at least another 40 years, if this time we're willing to stay the course. For the World, I'm John Miller.
Tomorrow, the oil embargo and driving, how U.S. car culture has and hasn't changed in 40 years.